Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Sparx conference call for update on ProSeek's interim results. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Jaydeep Israni. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Sagar. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jaydeep. I head the Business Development and Investor Relations at Sparx. On behalf of Sparx, I welcome you for the update on the interim analysis of ProSeek study. I have with me Mr. Anil Raghavan, CEO of Sparx. Anil will provide brief update on the outcome of the ProSeek study, following which we will open the call for question and answer. Before I hand it over to him, I would like to remind you that our discussion may include forward-looking statements that are subject to risks and uncertainties associated with our business. I will now hand it over to Mr. Anil Raghavan for his presentation. Over to you, Anil.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining the call today. Thanks, JP, for the introduction and setup for the call. As you mentioned, we plan to provide an update on the interim analysis of our ProSeek study and briefly talk about the next steps and the way forward for Sparx. The primary objective, though, is to try and address your questions and concerns as much as possible today. So I'll keep my opening comments brief. But before I begin, I would like to apologize for the delay in convening this call. We received data from the ProSeek interim analysis last week and made a disclosure of the results through a press release immediately, within a day. Our intent was to provide an update and talk to you as soon as possible. However, the immediate focus thereafter shifted to initiating the closeout activities which mandated and think through the near-term priorities which took a few days to complete. We believe it is important to map our key next steps toward avapritinib before we can have a productive conversation with you. Again, we understand the sensitivity and sincerely apologize for not following up the release immediately with the call. You may recall that our initial plan was not to disclose the interim results before completing the review of all the 513 patients randomized on the trial. However, in the interest of patients, our investigator community, and the larger investor group, we decided to unblind the study and share the results immediately, given the trend lines that we have seen. As we disclosed, we completed the review of 442 out of 513 patients, 442 who finished the first part of the study, part one of the study, by March of 2024.
That's the timing when semester 71.
Sue, can you put your line on mute, please?
Okay.
The data suggested that the vodobatinib arms, that is the low dose and high dose arms, did not meet the primary endpoint of change in score from baseline in MDS-UPDRS part 3 at week 40. Key secondary endpoints have also shown a similar trend. Overall incidence of serious adverse events was low in this trial, indicating an acceptable safety profile. That was indeed a disappointing outcome and certainly not what we hope for our patients, especially after having generated a significant body of evidence in preclinical model systems in collaboration with some of the most important thought leaders in this space, demonstrating the neuroprotective role of vodobatinib in multiple preclinical experiments. Based on our statistical projections that suggested that the study is unlikely to show clinical benefit in the overall study population, we decided to close the trial. Having said that, we will review the full data set, which is not expected to change the primary endpoint of the study. However, it can provide meaningful insights on the mechanism, the drug, and the trial. We will keep you informed as we complete this planned analysis. Once we have reviewed the full data, we will also evaluate the expectations for and the value of Lewy body dementia investigator-initiated trial at Georgetown and preclinical programs for the Bacchus series of vodobatinib, as they target the same mechanism of action as vodobatinib did placebo. But as of now, we have parked all activities in these studies. Obviously, these results represent a setback for SPARC, which will pose questions on certain parts of our portfolio and challenge our ability to pursue an aggressive R&D agenda. As we complete the data analysis for PROCEED, we will also work towards resetting our portfolio, optimizing our operating model and cost structure. This is really important considering the additional costs that we have got to charge. As we have indicated previously, SPARC's pipeline has significant optionality, including multiple clinical assets and a late-stage preclinical program, which is expected to enter the clinical testing phase in the last quarter of this financial year. So please allow me to make a minute to highlight these assets with short to medium-term milestone visibility. The most advanced program is ACO-088, as you may know, which is vodobatinib's oncology leg for treatment of CML. We have completed the phase 2 study, and the data provides clear validation for its hypothesis in leukemia, with excellent response rate, even in patients who have exhausted all available therapeutic options. As next steps, we are discussing the registration study design and expectations with the US FDA, in fact later today, to decide future development strategy for ACO-088. Since ACO-088 has established human POC, we may explore licensing the asset to a partner to raise non-dilutive capital for developing other late-stage assets, that's SCD-153 and SBO-154. SCD-153 is under phase 1 evaluation in India, and we hope to complete the phase 1 study by financial year 25, and subsequently an early patient study in alopecia areata in India by financial year 26, at which point we would have established human POC for SCD-153. Similarly, for SBO-154, our antibody drug conjugate targeting a novel epitope of MUC1, we have initiated IND-enabling studies, and we expect to file the IND by the end of the current financial year. Both these opportunities represent first-in-class potential for SPARC across multiple indications. Additionally, vivotolimod is under phase 2 assessment, and the top-line results of the Solaris AD, that is the atopic dermatitis study, is expected in quarter 4 of calendar year 24. This, as you know, is licensed to Sun Pharma, and the development costs are borne by the partner. The continued development of these programs will require additional resourcing, and our current cash balance and approved credit may be sufficient to cover the expenses for 12 to 15 months if we factor in expected cost savings from the vodobatinib and related deprioritizations. We are also eligible for additional milestones from vibostolimod and phenobarbital, depending on certain outcomes that can increase our runway further for SPARC. We may require additional resources to get to the next set of milestones in certain scenarios. We will tightly manage the portfolio and our spend to get to these next set of data events soon. As I indicated earlier, we will review our current clinical and preclinical portfolio to identify and prioritize high-value programs and optimize the cost base to extend our runway. Let me summarize. While the PROCEED interim results sets us back for sure, we have several additional assets, especially the clinical assets that carry significant value, which we will pursue using appropriate resourcing models, which may involve partnering early, if that makes sense. We will keep you posted as we make progress with the full analysis of the TRAFIQ data and complete our strategy review. Thanks again for joining us today. And at this point, I would like to open up the call for questions, concerns you may have, suggestions if you have any. And thank you again for your time today.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets only while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Again, participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. The first question is from the line of Ketan Gandhi from Gandhi Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, sir, due to this disappointment, in the November call, you said we have a surer option for vodobatinib for CML. So in terms of timeline, when can we expect the licensing deal to happen? And what are the opportunity size for this molecule?
Thanks, Ketan. I think, you know, as we've explained in the last investor call, we have parked the CML opportunity till we have the results of the vodobatinib study. So, as in the preclinical and the Parkinson's disease study. So, we will now initiate, I mean, that is the reason why we have this conversations with the FDA to have a clear visibility to the regulatory pathway. And we are now in the process of reinitiating potential business development activity on the CML part of the program. In terms of giving you a specific timeline for closing out of that licensing transaction, I think probably we are a little too early in the process. We just started this process now, and we may need additional time to kind of scan and go through the process and conclude a transaction for vodobatinib. In terms of the opportunity size, I think we haven't disclosed the specific peak sales potential, but it is significantly lower than the Parkinson's disease opportunity. And here we are talking about, you know, potentially several hundred million dollars as against, you know, several billion dollars in the case of the Parkinson's disease.
No, sir, I want the timeline in terms of whether it will happen this financial year, next financial year, or a year after the next financial year. Can you give some sort of ballpark, you know, understanding so that we can model that into our...
We're definitely targeting this financial year, and that's our objective.
Okay, so in terms of cash burn, we are enough cash position to, you know, go ahead for other programs, or we need to raise some equity in near term?
We are not contemplating any near term equity raise. And if I look at our current cash balance, which should be in the range of around $20 million, and we also have access to approved credit. And if I actually look at both approved credit and the current available cash, we should be able to basically go beyond the current financial year. We are looking at a burn window of around 12 to 15 months. And this also factors in some of the cost savings from the reprioritization. I mean, if you're not spending on the vibostolimod clinical program, what about in the clinical program and also the backup program that we have? That was a significant amount of, I mean, significant part of our budget for this year. So in that sense, if I take out that from the provision, this cash balance and access to credit is sufficient to take us to a 12 to 15 months runway. But we also have, you know, we are taking a deeper look at our portfolio priorities. Clearly, the assets that I spoke about in the call earlier are important, and we have, you know, clinical validations coming from mostly in India-based trials in these cases, except Mark 1. And so we may require, beyond that, we may need to have, you know, additional cash infusions. But that's depending on how some of these outcomes, you know, we have milestone visibility on rivosolimod, which is maturing later this year. And SESAB can also provide additional milestones. So there are additional milestone opportunities which can augment this beyond the 12 to 15 months window. So we will take a call as we kind of move towards that. But we will take a hard look at the portfolio and our cost structure in the interim.
Fair enough. Sir, can you throw some light on the phenobarbital? What happened there? Because I believe we have filed some case in in District Court of Colombia in 2nd of April. So right. What is that about and where are we in terms of, you know, launching it?
No, we have the case that we have filed against the HHS and the FDA has nothing to do with the launch of the product. The product is launched and the takeoff is expected when we get the exclusivity established. And there is a whole work stream going on, and our expectation right from the beginning is that by end of the second year or beginning of third year of launch, we will be able to establish the exclusivity or enforce the exclusivity and take out the unapproved products in the market. But the case is about a different matter. You know, we believe we are entitled to get a pediatric rare diseases voucher. And that pediatric rare diseases voucher was denied because of certain interpretations of statutes involved, and we disagree with that. I cannot dwell into this matter more than that since this is subjudice at the moment. So I don't want to, you know, talk a lot about our position and the specific nature of our disagreement, but we believe that, you know, we have a defensible case, and that's the reason why we initiated this process.
Thank you, sir. I have some more questions. I'll join back in the queue.
Sure.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants, you may please press star and one to ask a question. Our next question is from the line of Ashutosh from Zaitis Investments. Please go ahead.
Sir, for...
Hello.
For PROSEEK studies, sir, when can we expect full analysis results?
Sorry. I couldn't follow the question. So did you ask the availability of the full analysis results of PROSEEK?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we are looking to complete the full analysis of PROSEEK by the second quarter of this financial year.
Okay.
Ashutosh, do you have any further questions?
No, sir.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Vishal Bohra from MK Ventures. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, I just want to understand, are there any qualitative data points that you can share further on the PROSEEK trials? Or, you know, while we did not meet the primary endpoint, was there actually no efficacy, you know, outcome at all, like no response at all? Or was the response there but not sufficient to create the, you know, to cross the hurdles? What was the case here?
In the PROSEEK interim analysis, we looked at the primary endpoint, which is part 3 of MTS-UPTRS, and a few secondary endpoints, which is part 2 plus part 3, and the time to event, as in the time to systematic therapy. So this was a subset of the secondary endpoints we have in the trial. Plus, we also looked at three biomarkers, which is neurofilament light. We've looked at a binary alpha-synuclein assay, which essentially diagnoses the disease, And then we, in CSF fluid, look at the trending of alpha-synuclein. So in the primary endpoint, and as we indicated, you know, we did not meet the significance between placebo and our treated arms. And we have a similar trending for these subset of secondary endpoints that we've looked at. In both these cases, what I can say at this point is that we have an extraordinarily high placebo response. In fact, the placebo curve stayed flat for almost the study period. But we are not disclosing the specific data at this point. And you know, we will take a look at all the secondary endpoints and also all the biomarker endpoints. In biomarkers, we have conflicting data points coming from that biomarker study. So we will take a look at both the clinical outcomes across all secondary endpoints. We will also have, you know, we have looked at the first 9-month period data in this analysis. We also have an additional 9-month data for a subset of this patient pool. And we will also take a look at how this trajectory kind of pan out. But that's obviously an uncontrolled, as in it doesn't have a placebo control in the second part of this trial. So we will take a look at both the 9-month period, the second 9-month period, all biomarkers, and make a final view on both the target and the trial and the drug.
So a couple of related questions. So just to understand, so we are saying that the trial did not fail because of a poor outcome or a poor data on vodobatinib, but more because your placebo response was extraordinarily good. So could it be a case of maybe a trial design or you know, an externality? Do you think that there is a possibility that you may want to look at a retrial, with maybe a revised trial design or a revised endpoint and look at the trial again? Is there a possibility for that, sir?
Well, I wouldn't frame the way you framed it. I think when the study was designed for showing a 35% difference between placebo and drug, you know, 35% improvement over placebo. Obviously, the analysis that we have seen so far did not show that difference, and we have to wait till you know the full analysis of the data for any additional steps that we may have to take. In terms of, you know, actually factoring in vodobatinib into the model, you know, our advice at this point is to discount vodobatinib fully based on the trend lines that we have seen. And if there is a room for, you know, any kind of reframing this hypothesis or reframing based on any additional trials, we will definitely come back and advise you on the basis of additional review that we are going to take.
I may just want to frame the question differently. In terms of vodobatinib, the PROSEEK trial next steps, is a retrial one of the possibilities, sir? Even if it is, let's say, a 1% possibility, is that one of the options that is still available to us, or that is completely closed out?
No, I cannot close out anything at this point because we haven't seen the full data set. Unless we see the full data set and we understand, you know, what happened in the trial fully, you know, all of these options are possible, but they are very remote options based on what we've seen on the primary endpoint and secondary endpoint. That's why we are advising you to discount the program in the model.
Got it, sir. And what is the backup option we said? I think, was it referring to the Alzheimer's thing, or are you referring to backup as vodobatinib for CML and LBD?
So the hedge for vodobatinib, as in the hedge for PROSEEK, was essentially CML. Even though, you know, we had other preclinical programs for vodobatinib and its backup series in neurodegenerative diseases, we always considered that as one package, right, one battery, which will come alive if we have a positive response in PROSEEK. In the absence of that, the real alternative for vodobatinib is its leukemia program, which is what we just discussed.
Got it, sir. Thank you so much. I'll join back in for more questions.
next question is from the line of Manish Jain from Gormal One LLP. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to understand that in CML, given that the way Eskiminib has been ramping up to $450 million sales already at an annualized run rate, does it make sense for us to take it all the way to the final approval?
Hello, Manish. I mean, if the question is about Spark spending the resources to take this to the a regulatory approval in the U.S., the answer may not be yes. We may not. It may not be an appropriate use of Spark's capital to take that all the way to regulatory approval in the U.S., given other options or opportunities that we have in the portfolio. But there may be, other mid-sized pharmaceutical companies for sure who may be interested in a program like this, which can give, a significant enough opportunity from a commercial standpoint for a smaller sales force and with an opportunities to go up against, a product which is ramping up fast. And there are not very many options. And especially the safety profile that we have seen for the product and the activity that we have seen for late-line patients makes it a developable option. And we are seeing validation for that even after we kind of deprioritize the program. We get several requests for off-trial access for that drug because of its activity in patients who have exhausted all lines of therapy. So that's an interesting proposition for someone who is looking to build a $200-$400 million product, but that may not be a right opportunity to kind of prioritize our capital over the ADC or over the potentially first-in-class dermatology product.
Perfect. And my second question was that in phenobarbital, given that we have licensed it to an external party, should we win the PRV case, the entire PRV value belongs to us, or we have to share some proceeds with the partner as well?
The PRV is with Spark.
Yes, so 100% value of PRV is with Spark, right?
Yep.
All right. Thanks. I had a few other clarifications. I'll join back the queue.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chandpal Singh, who is an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello. Good evening, sir.
Hello.
Sir, I just wanted to ask a question that is this the end of the C-Able hypothesis for other drugs that are in trial for Parkinson?
Well, I don't think, Prasik, at the moment, the interim analysis is certainly not the last word for the mechanism. It's a serious setback for the mechanism, but we need to basically look at the full data set. We are practically sitting at a threshold of information in terms of how the mechanism actually behaves. So in that sense, whether it is a tractable hypothesis is something that needs to be determined based on the full analysis of the data set.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thanks.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question comes from the line of Rohan Parekh from Homestock Brokers. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Jigar Randia. Thanks for this call. So my question is, while Voda failed on the primary and secondary, it did cross the blood-brain barrier so it's a question, did it actually go through with regards to the 442 patients and is that anything of value or that thing?
So that's an important question that you're... I came in before you finished. Can you just repeat the last line of your question?
Yeah. So my question was that did the results show a successful crossing of the blood-brain barrier while it did not meet the primary secondary endpoints? And if it did, then is that of value for either us or as far as the therapy or a study is concerned generally?
No, that's an important question, Rohan, because you know we have the interim analysis did not include a PK analysis. So we have, even though we have access to all the both blood draws from all patients and also CSF data for an appropriate number of patients, we haven't analyzed that to determine the exposure that we have both peripherally and in the brain. So that is an important part of the analysis that we will be doing as part of the complete review.
Okay. Okay. So if it was not a part of it, then it can't be. Okay. Second question is with regards to the CML, the failure that happened for the PD thing, those primary secondary endpoints would be entirely distinct as far as the CML is concerned, and it would be completely, this is completely linked to PD and that would be linked to CML, but is it fair that there is no correlation between the two?
No, the primary and secondary endpoints of the Parkinson's trial is very specific to Parkinson's and the progression of that neurodegenerative condition, and it has got nothing to do with leukemia. And the proof of concept for leukemia is already available from our earlier earlier study, in phase 2 study. And if anything, the safety data from this trial is supportive of its dose in leukemia, which is actually lower than the doses that we have used in the Parkinson's trial. So there is, we don't see any negative fallout for PROSEEK in the leukemia program. If anything, it is positive because of the safety profile.
That's great. And for the leukemia program, we continue with after phase 2 with as imatinib plus one more as a line 3 product, right?
No, it will be, we are essentially in the process of having the conversations with the FDA, and actual treatment line for the trial will be decided based on the feedback that we received from FDA. But the study that we have done so far was in three line failed patients. That is the original proof of concept, and that is probably the most difficult setting to go after because they've exhausted all available lines of therapy. If we have an opportunity to move up and test a different line, it would be a function of what we hear from the agency.
Understood. Last question from my side. As far as the fundraise is concerned, it would have nothing to do with the timelines for the final study, which will be in Q2. And it would also be a function of you having the discussion with FDA or
The fundraise is not a function of our conversations with FDA because, as I explained earlier in to another question, we are not looking to allocate our capital for developing this program in leukemia. We are initiating a process to actively look for licensing partners for leukemia. So in that sense, from a cash flow funding standpoint, these conversations and our actual plans for leukemia may not be a major factor.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Best wishes. Thank you.
Thank you. Participants, if you wish to ask questions, you may please press star and one now. The next follow-up question is from the line of Ashutosh from Zydus Investments. Please go ahead.
Sir, I wanted to ask. Hello?
Yes, you're audible.
Hello?
Please go ahead.
Yeah, we can hear you, Ashutosh.
I wanted to ask, what is the trial cost, person?
We may have spent roughly in the range of 45, I mean the overall budget for PROSEEK was in the range of $45 million. But we may not end up spending all of $45 million because that assumed completion of the trial all the way to, you know, visit 11. That's 40 weeks for the part one and completion of the part two study. So now because of the early termination, we may be able to, you know, have some savings on that $45 million original allocation.
Sir, can I ask you how much you have spent?
Currently, it may be in the, you know, in excess of $35 million and original budget was 45 maybe.
Currently, how much?
35 plus. I don't have an exact number right at the moment, but it is certainly between 35 and 40. But closer to 35 than 40.
Okay. Yes. Thanks.
Thank you. As there are no further questions from the participants, I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Jaydeep Israni for closing comments.
Sagar, there are a couple of additional questions, if you could get the question.
We have the next question from the line of Mr. Vishal Bohra from MK Ventures. Please go ahead.
If you can highlight the next steps on your specialty pipeline, if you can just highlight the liquidity events or monetization events therein, and also what kind of milestones can we look at, what next steps across Trezabi and Elepsia and the other one.
Sorry, the major milestone payment from programs which you already licensed. Trezabi on clearance of the market, we have additional milestone payments which will happen as we move forward and clear the other products on the market and get our exclusivity established. DDP-716, which is our ophthalmology program, we are going in for refiling in September timeline, and we have milestones on approval of that product. And Vibosilimon, which is the phase two program in psoriasis and atopic dermatitis, and successful completion of those programs would have additional milestone events. So those are the three with identified milestones for us. Other than that, you have further clinical and developmental and regulatory milestones for Vibosilimod. We also have these two other programs which I talked to you about, which is the SCD-153 and SBO-154. SCD-153 is a collaboration with Hopkins in alopecia areata, and that we just started our phase one clinical trial in India. We are on a dose escalation, and our intent is to establish a clinical proof of concept for that program in alopecia areata before we start looking at partnering options. SBO-154 is again an antibody drug conjugate targeting a new epitope of MUC1, and we are in the process of scaling up our manufacturing for the clinical program, and its non-clinical programs started. Our hope is that we will be able to do the IND for this program before the turn of this financial year. So those are the two major programs which is closer to engageable even, other than the three I spoke about license programs.
There's not much mention in the last couple of presentations about Vibosilimod for psoriasis. So while we in the call also today, I think you mentioned atopic dermatitis. So can you highlight for what the status of psoriasis is there?
Yeah, we haven't. Our commercialization partner Sun hasn't given a timeline for the completion of the psoriasis program. The psoriasis program is behind atopic dermatitis program, so it will follow the results of the atopic dermatitis program. I mean, we don't think that we will have data availability from that program this year. That's why, you know, we're not talking about that. But if that program also is progressing, and probably, you know, Sun can give us an update on specific timelines for the psoriasis program.
So what would be what would be your estimate as to vis-a-vis when do we start seeing the commercial revenues flowing in meaningfully? Once you have the exclusivity established, would you have a timeline sense to it?
Look, I think, you know, we had a citizen's petition with FDA, and FDA came back to us asking more time. They said that this is a complex matter and it required additional time. And they did not set a specific timeline in terms of when they will act on the citizen's petition. And in this process, we are also adding additional leverage points in terms of working with patient advocacy groups and also directly engaging with some of the unauthorized manufacturers. So if I look at what happened with other programs which came into a market similar to Sisabi, usually take 2 to 3 years before the product gets full exclusivity established. So we just completed the first year and then into the second year. And I think we have a full-fledged process going. And our hope is that we will be able to maintain a similar timeline.
Got it, sir. And for Elepsia and Zelpros, any further updates you want to highlight?
There is a process of, you know, transitioning Elepsia to a different partner, but we don't have finalization of that process yet. So we are still in process stages there.
Got it, sir. Sure. Thank you so much, sir. I'll just one more thing Vodobetinib for CML, in terms of head-to-head, what are the options if you have to go for a front-runner trial? Do you have any specific options earmarked or highlighted or that you have decided that this would be most relevant comparison?
So if we were to do a comparative study, which looks like that's what we should do, and most likely comparative product would be most relevant comparator product would be bosutinib, but we will take that final call based on the FDA feedback.
Okay. Or is it possible for us to do maybe more than one arm of study, given that a couple of the other products are more prevalent, whether it's dasatinib or nilotinib?
Yeah, that's again a function of the design which we agree with FDA. I'm assuming your question is about like multiple comparators. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because dasatinib being the largest and it's a $2 billion molecule, my sense is in that ballpark in any case. So would it be not fair for us to target and try and prove a head-to-head comparison against something like dasatinib? And if you're able to do equally well or maybe better, that opens up a path for a bigger commercialization possibility here than the $200 to $400 million, sort of that ballpark of a few $100 million that you highlighted.
I think that it's not just a regulatory question, it's also a clinical science question in terms of how you actually maximize your probability of success with the program. And if you look at, you know, the second or third generation trials that happen in leukemia, and if you look at what has been the comparator for those programs, that would give you a clear sense of, you know, what is the preferred comparator program for even programs like axitinib or any of the second or third generation programs that have been pursued. So it's a complex question which is driven by both commercial calculus and also probability of success and the ability to kind of reduce the risk of the program. So we will take that call based on what we hear from the agency.
All right, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Manish Jain from Gormal One LLP. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to understand on SCD 153, till what level will we develop it on our own and when will we explore partnering S153?
So the development program for SCD 153 has, you know, three identified steps so far. One is completing its, you know, healthy human volunteer single ascending dose trial, which is where we are at the moment. That establishes early safety for the program. And typically in a program like this, you know, this would have been followed by a 14-day multiple ascending dose study. So instead of doing that 14-day multiple ascending day study, we are proposing to do a patient study in multiple ascending setting. In a sense, we will test this trial in ascending doses in alopecia areata patients. So that will give us two things. One, you know, it will give us a better sense of safety profile in actual patient setting. And it may, even though we are not powered to detect that, it may provide an early signal on efficacy. And then we will follow that up with a phase two study to determine the dose and also get proof of concept for the mechanism. And we are planning that in two steps. The first part is an India-based study where we will go up to 250 patients in India and do an interim analysis for those India-based patients. And if we get a proof of concept for 250 patients, that protocol will have a provision to expand the study to the rest of the world. But that India-based proof of concept for 250 patients is what we believe as an ideal licensing opportunity given where we are.
Perfect. And the second clarification I wanted is for ADC, which manufacturing ramp up that we are talking about, is it in-house manufacturing capability that we have developed?
No, we are working with a San Diego-based CDMO for scaling up this program.
Got it. Thanks, Anil.
Sure.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rohin Komra, who's an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello, sir.
Hello.
Sir, just to be sure, when we say that Vodafone will be out-licensed in next 2 or 3 years, that we will also out-license it for our front-runner program also.
Sorry, Rohin, I your line was very blurred and I couldn't hear you properly.
Sir, when we say that Vodafone will be out-licensed in next 1 or 2 years,
you're talking about the CML arm of Vodobatinib, right, Rohin?
Yes, sir, CML arm.
Right.
Is it a fair assumption to assume that we are outlasting it for our front-runner program also?
Front-runner? And then what is front-runner? No, so I understand your question as whether the CML part of the board of Batman would be out-licensed in the this year or next year. The answer is that's our objective. We are initiating this process, and as I said earlier, our objective is to finalize that process this year. I didn't quite follow the second part of your question.
I mean that we are also trying Vodafone in the frontline settings.
Yeah, if it is out-licensed, it will be for all settings of Vodobatinib in leukemia, not just the last line.
Okay, sir. Then that means that milestone payment that we are going to see will be while keeping in mind the potential of in the both line settings.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you need a model, but yes, it will cover both the frontline setting and earlier lines as well as the last line.
Okay, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashutosh from Zydus Investments. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Hello.
Sir, for Vodafone, is there any corporate presentation deck available on the recent reports?
There is a web presentation on the website. On you're asking about Vodafone, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's on the website.
Where it is?
It's on the Spark website.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Thank you. As there are no further questions, I would like to hand the conference over to Mr. J.D. Visrani for closing comments.
Thank you, Sagar, and thank you everyone for joining the call today. In case you have any additional questions, feel free to reach out to us on the email IDs and numbers that are shared on our website. Thank you again for being with us on the call.
Thank you. On behalf of Spark, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.